Now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
I'm like, I'm a little low energy. I'm sort of horribly ill.
I have a cold as well.
I have the, you know that thing where I was blind for PenguinCon?
Have pink eye?
It was not pink eye. It's
looked like it.
Yeah, it's sclerosis. It's actually part of my eye is inflamed and unhappy. And they put me on steroids, and I feel...
Good for looking at my face, I told
awful.
You.
Awful. You're horrible. Mark!
Oh, you're there. You admit it, see? Oh.
You're horrible to yourself. You're adorable. You were all adorable. Adorable people.
I'm horrible. You said horrible. But I have a cold at the moment, but you say you have an unhappy eye still.
Well, yeah, and they put me on steroids to clear it up, and my body does not enjoy them at all. At all. It's just like, ugh. I just want to lay down all the time.
Well,
I want to lay down all the time as well.
You don't mean it's fun.
Alrighty, this is episode 76 of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, and we are hosted on the Rampage Network at rampagenetwork.com, a webcomics community, and I'm Fess of psiwebcomic.com, and with me are my co-hosts, first off, Tanya at betapwn.com.
Hello, hello.
As well as Mark Savory of autumnlake.com.
Hello.
And a special guest this week, who's part of this week's theme and part of a panel we had at PenguinCon, Adam Smithy of Apple of Discord at appleofdiscord.com. TheApple.com.
The Apple, yes. Apple of Discord is a garage band in Philly, apparently, who got the name slightly before I did.
Oh.
Let's... Stupid Philly.
Are they good, though?
Don't worry. They'll have to give up their dreams when they got to stop paying their rent. Then maybe you'll get the... Yeah.
When they have to rent the garage instead of just
using...
When
they can't live with Mom anymore.
I'll just apologize now to everyone I know in a garage band. I don't really feel that way. No. You'll all be successful.
And Joker. I mean that. Grinning your teeth. Very good. Anyway, on the Rampage Network at rampagenetwork.com, this month's feature hosted comic is 031. Yes, that is 031 at 031.net. 15 years after the so-called apocalypse, now sparsely populated and criminally twisted city streets of San Francisco are picking up where natural selection left off. 031, October 31st, not only follows the southbound trek of Darren Ross, a former drug dealer on the run with the aid of a happy coincidence and no scruples, but also attempts to answer the question of what awaits us in the absence of rules. Redemption? Or ruin. That's at 031.net.
Jeez. How can you tell San Francisco got hit by an apocalypse?
Hey. I've heard stories. I love San Francisco.
Just saying.
San Francisco is a glorious place.
isn't that where Starfleet Academy is?
Yeah, that's Francisco. True.
I don't know. I'm a bad Star Trek nerd, I'm afraid.
It is true. It is in San Francisco.
Ah, yes.
Yes, which is basically like painting a giant bullseye on the planet for any alien species that have beef with us, too.
Well, it's San Francisco.
That's why they chose San Francisco.
That's horrible.
Away from anything important.
What do we have against San Francisco?
It's not on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah. It's not cold like it is on the East Coast, either.
I don't know. If we have any listeners in San Francisco, enlist in Starfleet today. Anyway.
And watch out for zombies. With the apocalypse of that great webcomic.
This week on the Webcomic Beacon, we are talking about, well, basically the things that you should not be doing when making a webcomic. We can go on and try to tell you, like, we know things about what to do to make a successful comic. But we're going to tell you what not to do. Well, unless you want to make a very unsuccessful comic.
We're going to tell you what not to do because it's what we're most familiar with.
Yes. And partly it's from first-hand experience. A lot of these you may find in... also attributed with first comic syndrome. Adam?
Yeah.
Adam has the list, and he will be the moderator and the announcing number 10, if we're going in any particular order.
All right. number 10. Of my top 10 things you can do to more or less destroy your webcomic, disenfranchise your readers, and basically disillusion yourself with the entire webcomic community is repeatedly breaking the fourth wall, especially in your very first comic.
Ooh, hiss!
Ooh, hiss! Yeah, this is, you know, Fess's number one complaint seems to be the first comic of, hi, we're going to make a webcomic. Or I think our favorite one was the, okay, we're getting ready to make a webcomic and everyone's like being busy and doing things. And then the last frame is always, oh no, now we have to be funny.
Oh, now we got to be funny. I guess we should start being funny. Oh, we do.
I actually did do that as my first comic.
Oh.
But only it was about, I'm going to make a webcomic, but I'm not going to be one of those fools that make the first comic about making a webcomic. And then I realize how stupid I am, and then I get called an idiot by Ernst.
Yeah.
Luckily to the magic of the internet and webcomics, the first six strips don't exist on the main storyline anymore.
Yeah.
That's, you know, you're a revisionist.
Yes.
What is?
Hey, it's a hobby.
Revisionist.
It's a hobby, and I'm not making any money off of it.
Hey.
You use that like a crutch?
Hand shot first.
What?
Hand shot first, that's right. Keep it in mind.
And well, it's moved to another session anyway.
Go ahead, Adam. Well, bring some logic.
The thing that struck me was I did this as this was actually the first How Not To webcomic that I did, because in the Apple of Discord I've got a sub feature running where I've got a aspiring webcomic author making all of these mistakes just to explore the horrible consequences that happens. And I actually, after I did that, it was just going to be a one-off thing, and I had two or three people email me and link to me saying, you are so right and I am so sorry. Because they had done it themselves. And I started out on a kick reading webcomics, reading a bunch of new webcomics. And I kept hitting this every single comic. And it's just such a bad sign. And I've seen some perfectly good comics start off this way and recover from it, but my theory is this: there have been thousands, possibly tens, hundreds of thousands of web comics that have been created, and of them a lot of people have done this and then have set a precedent by doing this and going on to do something just terrible afterwards. So it's not so much that this in and of itself is a problem, it's that so many people have started here and have gone downhill that people who are familiar with webcomics, like myself, see this as blood in the water.
Exactly.
You know, already
awesome bad start.
Awesome bad start, yes. And bad start. You want to roll this on to number two, which is weak, bad, hackneyed, overplayed, overdone story arcs. Which the reason we've got this at number two is, as Fest was saying, one of the first bad story arcs that a lot of bad webcomics then engage in is the whole characters in the webcomic decide that they themselves are going to create a webcomic.
Yeah.
And hilarity hypothetically ensues, though you don't actually see it happen most of the time.
Hypothetically, and yet not typically. Yeah. Rarely.
I do have an exception to this rule. And that is, if you were a hobbyist and you're trying to think on paper of what you should do, as well as think about the type of characters you want, something like this is all right as long as it's not actually going to be a part of your comic in the updates. If you want, if this helps you in helping to start off what your project, maybe put it in like the extra section for scraps or something like that. But as I did find it helpful for eventually what my comic turned into, but mm-hmm. you really should put it as far as the main archives because it's been done. Very
better
much.
Yet.
Yeah.
Create it. Keep it. And then when you have a well-established, successful comic running, you can release it as an extra of, like, you know, the genesis of, you know, name of comic here. Release it as a mini comic, whatever else, you know, as a little, maybe even a vote incentive or a donation incentive, that kind of thing. Where once people are invested in you and are interested in, you know, in your process and how you started, now you actually have something to show them. You can say, this is me actually, you know, learning how I was going to do the comic and figuring out what it was going to be about in comic form.
And it's good that we bring up exceptions, too, because there were some exceptions for the first rule, which kind of play into this one, which is journal comics where the characters can't help but talk to the audience directly.
Yeah.
Or slice of life comics, which part of the person's life is actually the fact that they're starting the webcomic that you're reading now. Those, you can't get away from this sort of thing happening, but it's an issue of class as to how you handle it too, because you said, the punchline of, oh no, now we have to be funny is just, That right there, that is the indicator that you rolled a one. You're not going to be able to.
And yet, your initiative is so low that everyone will be funny before you.
You rolled a zero with a D20.
That's hard. It's hard to do. I have occasionally, you know, I'll do a comic more often addressing the fact that I occasionally recognize that my parents still read my comic. And that's, you know, that's typically where, you know, because I do a journal comic where it'll be Janine, which is my character, creating the comic and then realizing that, you know, God, I can't say that because my dad's reading this. You know, that type of thing. I've also done a couple little comics here and there with writer's block. And at one point, I painted myself into a corner and had no idea how I was going to proceed. I couldn't get the last comic right. So I actually just put up a comic where it was just scenery for three panels. And then the last panel, Janine kind of peeks in and says, I can't figure out how to finish this. Come back later. And, you know, bought me a little time. So I've done it occasionally. Even with a journal comic, though, you can't get away with it all the time. I don't think you could do a comic entirely about doing a comic, because then it's really about nothing at all. And not in, like, the Seinfeld way. It's just really about nothing.
But that also brings up another good point, which is the handling of bad story arcs, whether or not you keep them in continuity afterwards, or what do you do if you have a story arc that goes unintentionally wrong and you can't quite fix it? I think at the convention, one of you mentioned there was a comic, and I wish I knew the name of it, where the story went so completely off the mark that a bus showed up, and all the characters got on the bus and rode back to the beginning of the comic arc, and then got back out to try it again and try not to wind up in the same place.
Okay, see, that's funny. That's well done. Yeah.
It's different anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all about delivery and originality. Well, I may not have originality. My comic is kind of in the position where it's stuck in the breaking the fourth wall, or at least from the beginning, because I do crossovers and cameos so much, and that was so much a part of the beginning of the comic, because it was originally just supposed to be an excuse to have cameos and crossovers to begin with. And that kind of plays into the world of the crossover wars and many other comics more blatantly than the other involved comics are. So my comic already is set around that. Though if I had the choice, I would do it over. I'm too far along to do it over for the web anyway. But I should have restarted it way back by strip 50. But yeah.
Yeah, if you're 50 strips into something, I can understand, you know, not wanting to just scrap it, you know, and admitting, you know, this is not really going where I needed it to go. I quit, you know, and start over. That's an investment. That's 50 strips. I do think that it is important that sometimes we recognize that we've gone horribly wrong. I long since promised my audience that I would stop doing fantasy arcs. Things that didn't actually have something to do with my real life, because I'm bad at it. So, you know, I finished one and got through and apologized profusely and won't do it again. But I did not remove it from the archive. I left it there, if nothing else, as a reminder that I should not do that again.
All right. Anybody have anything else, or should we move on to number 3 on the list here?
Might as well move on.
Let's keep all rolling.
Right. Now, number 3 is a bit of a controversial one here, because I remember when we brought this up at the convention, Seth himself objected to this a little. But
Of course. I mean, what kind of person would I be if I didn't?
Well, number 3 is forbidden types of comics. And I don't mean forbidden as in that they're just like you can't do them, but doing this specific format of a comic will automatically put you in a category that some people will just not read no matter how good your comic is. And the list has gone up a little bit based on some of the things. Originally, I had isolated Sprite comics, Gamer right. comics, and Furry web comics, which was the one Seth objected to.
But I surprise.
Since then, pointed out to me that adult, extremely mature web comics also pigeonhole you, as well as photo-based web comics.
Yes.
So I'm not specifically saying anything is wrong with these, but if it's your first web comic out and you're trying to garner the maximum potential capacity for readership, picking a web comic form that is going to disenfranchise a good half or more of the potential pool of webcomic readers is shooting yourself in the foot from the get-go.
Yeah.
Some genres or types of comics are a little bit more pigeonholed or a little bit more niche markets than others. So as far as full market potential of the internet goes, I mean, yeah, some of those are going to be a little bit more confined as far as what your audience is before they automatically write you off because they're not interested in photo comics, furry comics, etc.
Right.
By no means this should be any reason to not do what you want to do.
I think there are two ways you can go wrong here. You either wind up you can do one of the forbidden types, like a gamer comic, that is so oversaturated that if you don't have something that is terribly unique, you're going to get washed away in just you know, just the immense genre. There's too many voices calling for attention, and it just creates noise, and it's difficult to single out a particular comic from that din. And then the other way is, you know, like you were suggesting, where you've created a niche comic, and I do also do collaborative work on adult webcomics, and that falls into that. We, you know, when we started, we understood we have a smaller audience base available to us than if we had done, you know, a general webcomic. If you're okay with that, if you're looking for a niche audience, then that's fine. But don't go into one of these niche, you know, categorizations like furry comics, expecting that all of webcomicdom will love you. Just don't be surprised if you start a niche comic.
Will hate you.
At least half will hate you automatically. Yeah. If you start a niche comic, you have to recognize it for what it is and be pragmatic. Don't be bitchy. Because people get terribly assholic about the whole, you're not reading my comic just because of blank. Well, yeah.
It's a Sprite comic. It's so cool. You should be reading it. Why not? Why are you hating my Sprite comic?
You should have known.
It's got furry sprites.
Wow, that's what it is. A furry sprite adult gamer comic. And there will be three people. Better yet, draw the sprites and then take pictures of them. And then you will alienate 85% of your audience. The 15 will just be there for train wreck value.
You know, and I myself am infamously guilty of this one. My first comic, which started in 2003, was a sprite comic. I knew nothing of the webcomic world whatsoever. I read 8-Bit Theater and thought it was cool, and I wanted to try something similar.
Mm-hmm.
I did understand the basic fundamentals of copyright law, however, so I created my own sprites using the Final Fantasy sprites as a template to, like, design better, more advanced my own forms off of. I updated 5 to 7 times a week for over 2 years. And I promoted like crazy. But because I wasn't a Mega Man sprite comic, I never found a home in the sprite comic fandom. And because I was a sprite comic on the outside, I really never found a home in the outside of sprite comics fandom. And I think what did it for me was I did a bunch of web work on a now defunct web journal, like a monthly net magazine. And this was like 2004, so it was not horribly hackneyed back then.
Mm-hmm.
And in return, they were going to feature me as their web comic of the month. And I did an interview. I talked at length to the guy. We got a whole bunch of very nice stuff down. It went to the beginning of the month when the stuff was supposed to be posted, and the overall general editor yanked his interview with me and reran something from the Penny Arcade guys because, as he said, we don't do sprite comics. Sprite comics are garbage, and it doesn't matter. It never looked at my comic, did not even try and read it.
It just doesn't matter.
My comic wasn't fantastic, but I think that to me right there was the death knell because as much as I liked doing that format, I knew I'm never going to get any sort of a lasting readership because it's so hard getting new people into your comic if you pick a form like that that automatically sets so many people at odds with you.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to this one in two list topics because there is another similar issue that we're going to bring up that's going to also elicit similar responses.
So we shouldn't run this to death.
About font.
Do we have anything else about this, or can we go to break?
I think we should break.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, more bashing.
sprites. I like 7-Ups better.
The Webcomic Beacon is an affiliate of The Geek Media. The Geek Media has a number of geek-related podcasts, blogs, and videos for you to enjoy. Check out thegeekmedia.com. Have news, milestones, questions, or comments? Send your audio clips or email to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com.
Sprite makes me nauseous.
7-Up has a lighter, crispier taste, I think.
It does, but it's
Sprite tastes a little syrupy.
Yeah. And I think that's why it makes me nauseous. Anything like heavy concentrated sugar just makes me nauseous now.
I get diet all the time.
Mm. See, and that's why I like diet soda. Regular soda is too sugary. I've gotten to this horrible point in my life where sugar makes me sick. How sad is that? What kind of a nerd am I?
Is it sugar or corn syrup that's
making sweet?
I think it's actually just any sort of heavy concentrate. Because like even the very original Dr. Pepper that, you know, actually has sugar in it, still is a little much for me. I can drink one, but it takes me like 4 hours. Otherwise, I just get sick.
Yeah. Have any of you tried the throwback? The Pepsi or the Mountain Dew throwback that's got the cane and beet sugar instead of corn syrup.
I haven't seen them yet.
Yeah. I tried them. Well, that's because you're in no man's land.
Yeah.
Poor thing.
No hot chick land either.
We're trying to move you. We'll do a rock concert. We'll do a move everyone we love to someplace that doesn't suck concert. And we will. We just need a location. Where do we all want to move?
I'm fine in Minnesota. There's nowhere else I'd want to live, I don't think.
Okay, you know what? Negative 30 is not a temperature, all right? No, Minnesota is not hospitable. We do have
indoors, you know, with heating.
Also, I say New Hampshire. Also, there's no state sales tax there.
Unless you're an idiot, there's no natural disaster you need to worry about.
Well, it's cold! I don't want to spend the rest of my life indoors, not because I'm a homebody, but because the outside is not conducive to life. Like, that's just not... No. No.
Fine, I'll be out sledding down hills, and you'll be inside being the loser.
Actually, no. I'll be outside doing fun things, not freezing to death.
Wah.
Duncan's trying to get me. RT's trying to get me to move to Minnesota, too. I told him no. No, I'm not going.
I vote for New Hampshire.
I don't want to go to New Hampshire.
But New Hampshire is pretty, and it doesn't really snow as much as you'd think.
Really?
And it's cool and stuff.
Okay, how hot does it get in the summer in New Hampshire?
What, 80s?
Ugh.
I mean, you might have a day that's 90.
What the hell do you want? There's no state that's room temperature. I'm sorry, Tanya.
No. I actually like things quite warm. Like, it's spring here in Colorado, and we're getting, you know, pretty steady in the 80s to early 90s, and it'll get a little past 100 in the summer.
Anyway, what not to do in a webcomic.
Sorry.
Webcomic Beacon.
We're going to talk about the weather. I thought we were at break. What happened to break?
There's no such thing as break. Live.
Yeah, I know.
Just said there was, and you're eating something, too.
I'm eating a sandwich.
Listen to this guy.
I know. Sandwich.
I'm almost done. Adam?
I had a birch beer, so...
I'm here.
Shall we continue, Adam?
Alrighty. number 4 on the list. And I actually have stolen the name from this from something that Tanya said, because I didn't have a good, cool-sounding name for it. And she surmised it awesomely. She said, knowing the difference between inspiration and imitation.
Yes.
And this basically just comes from the principle that I have seen so many webcomics out there which are essentially Penny Arcade, but with differently named and designed characters. I've even seen a number of comics out there that are essentially Penny Arcade with the same named characters and designed characters, except for the bit where they're drawn by other people and aren't as good. There's a lot to be said for finding the idea for your webcomic in another comic. Like I said, my original comic was inspired by 8-Bit Theater. But you got to take it to the next level and have it become an entity that is your own. And if you don't, it's going to become really, really obvious very quickly, especially if any of your readership has seen the other webcomic. I guess what I'm saying is if you're going to plagiarize something obscure.
It's like when you turn in your high school paper and, you know, you don't cite references, don't use Shakespeare. You know, try to find something that is not easy to pick out for its clear markers. My biggest thing, the thing that I find so hilarious, is people who do gamer comics claim they're not ripping off Penny Arcade, but they have Gabe hair. Okay, we've seen Gabe. It's a distinctive hairstyle. It's not a shock when we recognize that exact character. And, you know, if you're doing a gamer comic and you have the smart guy and the silly guy, we also get it. You know, it's not subtle. It's not subtle.
It's Gabe and Tycho with different colored hair and different colored shirts a lot of the time.
Exactly.
Why anybody would want to do this and think it's going to lead to fame and fortune and respect and, I don't know, permission to touch a girl or whatever they want. I don't know why. Why would they do this?
People are under the impression, and I've actually believed this for a while, people are under the impression that fame is formulaic and it has nothing to do with the individuals and their creative process or their hard work or any of those things. It's simply whatever elements they put into it. You know, it's the alchemist version of artistic creation, where if I use smart guy, silly guy, couch controllers, product references, I will too drive a new Mercedes. Art doesn't work that way.
Arcade isn't even just that. A lot of their best stuff are the stuff when they go off on their own.
Absolutely. But those aren't elements that they can pull out so easy and try to apply to the formula. You can't plug those things in, and those are what make it good, are the things that aren't formulaic and can't be plugged in, and the things that have to do with their creative process and just who they are as people and what they know is funny. That's what works for them. It's
when I drew their eyes the same way. It's kind of people. Oh, why don't people read my comic? I thought the same way. Look, it's so good.
See, and now you're going to get me on the manga rant, okay? In America, people have that idea. I drew the eyes the same way. They get the idea that if they draw the characters the same way and do the same kind of actions, that they will be popular because manga is popular. What they do not understand is that manga in Japan is a soul-sucking exercise. It is done by people who are forced into a particular artistic style, are allowed no artistic expression, and literally put out things for people to read on the train. It's not, you know, it's not considered high art. It's a drudgery for the artists. None of them are making huge amounts of money. It's not something to aspire to. Don't aspire to chaining yourself to a drudgery. I absolutely believe that anyone who has the impetus to create something has it within them to do something unique and to themselves. It may not be popular, but it will be good. That's my rant. End rant.
Just saying.
Another comic I wanted to point out besides Penny Arcade that is highly susceptible to blatant idea plagiarism is XKCD.
Yes.
Because XKCD is, I suspect, going to be in a couple of years the new Sprite comic template. Because what happens with things like that, and this is just my observation, but you get people like me who are not the most fantastic artists in the world, but who have a lot of ideas that they want to put out there. And you get a format which looks on the outside like it is low impact art. Sprite Comics is all just copying and pasting. Just ask anyone who's never done a Sprite Comic. They will happily tell you how easy it is. And XKCD is all just stick figures and math jokes. So
yeah.
There's a lot of comics that have come, especially in the last couple of years since XKCD rose to high popularity in the community. And believe me, they're really worth it. It's a great comic, but there are a lot of people out there who I've even seen a couple of web comics that that describe themselves as things like, it's like XKCD except in color.
Because that's what's missing.
Anytime, oh yes, yes. Anytime that you find yourself describing your comic as, it's just like blank, except blank. That's never a good sign, especially if the second blank is funnier. Because that's, and I've seen so many people, I've seen, you know, like, it's all about the pitch. You're in an elevator, you've got a couple of minutes to lay down the pavement as to what your comic does to the guy you're talking to, and I've seen so many people out there that the best they can come up with is, wow, well, it's just like Genius Girl, except, or
yeah,
it's just like Penny Arcade, but, you know, in a dimension where Game and Tycho are aliens. No, and it's
See, and I go back to something that a therapist once told me. I went to marriage counseling long ago. It clearly worked well. I'm divorced. But the therapist said that whenever you say but, the word but invalidates whatever came before it.
Yep, I learned that in telemarketing.
Yeah, it's just like Penny Arcade, but, oh, no, that means it's nothing like Penny Arcade. It's your sad, sorry version with whatever you put on after that. And, you know, one of the greatest, you know, compliments I ever got for my comic was from Mark, who does the Thinking Ape Blues. And he said, it's like Kathy, he said, it's like Kathy on tequila and Skinamax. And I thought it was really funny. But I'm smart enough to not use it as a tagline.
How about when it goes the other way? And they say, because I've seen this too, it's just like blank, only not as funny.
Oh, see, why would I read it then?
You know what I mean? They're trying to be all funny.
Self-depreciating humor is not an advertisement. Ever. You know, every time you go in there and you say, this sucks, people go, okay, and then they don't read it. Train wreck value is not something that you can create. It is applied to you. It's not something that you start out with.
Yeah, that's been so done. You know,
you can read if you want, but it kind of sucks.
I mean, it's been done to death.
Well, I'll only say that if I'm asked what my comic is.
Well, why would you start by gutting yourself down?
Because I don't even think my comic is readable to most people because of how inconsistent it seems to be. People get lost.
Here's the thing. Have enough respect for your audience to let them decide.
They're not my audience yet, though.
Well, okay. Have enough respect for humanity in general to let them form their own opinions. We don't need to be told what's good and what's bad. We are capable of discerning that for ourselves.
Ah.
And if you yourself like your comic enough to post it, someone else will too. Don't make that decision for them. Just say, this is what it's about.
I think that webcomic authors and artists are some of the most self-depreciating people I've ever met, but it's a mixed bag because some of them are like, oh, my comic sucks, because they want the person that they're talking to go, oh, no, it doesn't, honey. Your comic's good. But a lot of times it isn't. So it's really a little hard to break that to somebody when they're like, oh, my comic sucks. And you're like, yeah, I know. But I think part of it is that there's a humbleness that comes with it. You know, my strength is as a writer, not as an artist. So yeah. I openly acknowledge my comic is not eyeball meltingly good. If anything, it is occasionally eyeball meltingly bad. I try to have my own unique style there, but the truth is, you know, I went to school for math and science, not for drawing. I draw my pictures as a vehicle for my words, and I acknowledge that that is not one of my strengths. It's one of my weaknesses, and it's something that I need to work on to get better. And of course, that usually turns into, oh no, your art's not that bad. And I'm like, yes, it kind of is. Have you looked at my comic?
Well, and that's the other thing. Some people are searching for compliments.
Is that more of a hobbyist reaction than one of the people that are actually they've had training and they're more like professionals because they kind of are? I mean, I don't think you'll ever hear one of the people who went to art school say that.
Untrue.
No.
Really?
Yeah. I know a number of artists who are amazing. I would pay money for their artwork in a heartbeat, and they are very self-depreciating. And what it comes down to is that I'm going to go into science nerd here again. Neurologically, people who are more artistically inclined are also more inclined to things like depression and low self-esteem. So I can't understand at some point always feeling like you're not good. You know, you're not good enough. And that insecurity is very common, but there is no reason to display that insecurity to the public. There's no reason for that. Save it for your therapist and your friends. Don't bleed that onto other people. Don't say, you know, I suck, and hope that people will say, no, you don't. Because half of them are going to just say, oh, okay, and not look. They're not going to bother. Don't do that to people. Don't think of it so much as not holding yourself up or, you know, not having an ego, an overinflated ego about your own work. Think about it as just having respect for other people. And you have enough respect to let them have their own opinions.
I have enough respect to not let them subject themselves to the horribleness that is my comic.
Oh. See, okay, like Adam, you are correct. Your writing is your strong suit over your art. If, however, Adam, every time he talks about his comic, said, the art is absolutely horrible, but I think the writing's okay, that's not a draw. That's not helpful. If, however, every time Adam talks about his comic, he said, I'm a really strong writer, and I'm trying to get there with my art, that's a much more positive look at it, and you're allowing people to make their own opinions still being pragmatic and honest with yourself.
I was going to say the second half is a lie, but...
I just shot.
This is... Seth asked me to be the shepherd to keep this sort of online, so I think I'm going to drop a card on the field here and say let's move on to number five, even though this has been fun, because number five, you guys could probably do an entire podcast based on one of the issues I'm going to bring up here. So
Wait. Is this small enough to finish in the second half of the show?
I think we can probably do it because
we have about 5 minutes left before we go to the third segment, and I kind of wanted to keep it in the first two.
I think we can hit this and just go because it's going to be we might want to revisit it based on after we've gotten, you know, a bunch of people telling me I'm wrong.
Okay.
We might want to revisit it at the beginning of part two, but
because
most of the stuff here is fairly cut and dry. It's just there's the one bit that's not. Number five is out and out readability. And I don't mean how good is it. I mean, how can people using their eyes interpret it into their brain? One of the big issues that I see is font usage. People who are using too small of a font, who don't understand screen resolution properly, who have scaled up or down their comic to the point where it is ugly, or who have picked a font that is not, you know, I mean, cursive might be nice if you're doing like a little formal announcement for something.
And
but
it's huge.
A cursive-based font, as far as the writing in a webcomic, you don't want to make people's eyes bleed.
Yeah, like when pirates talk or stuff like that, they give them this old-timey, crow quill written fonty scrawly thing.
Which can be good if it's not too fancy. I know of a comic recently in Danimab's Furry Adventures, one of the characters met this one person who had this really, really fancy font, and you could barely read it. And it wasn't until a strip or two, I think a strip later, in which the character said, "I'm really having a hard time understanding you," because it was part of how she was difficult to understand. And
right.
So it was a part right. of it, and then it fixed itself. She started speaking in verbally, I guess it was, because it was like in his mind or something. You know, so it depends on execution, how long it is, how very fancy it is. But you have to maybe you should ask your friends to see if it's good enough or you can, to read.
Yeah. Usually my best recommendation is have at least a couple of different computers with different monitor sizes and bring your comic up on someone else's computer and see how it looks, because just because you're still using 800 by 600 as your default screen resolution doesn't mean the rest of the world is, and what may be completely and totally legible to you to somebody that's using a really high screen resolution is going to be retina hurting, eye squintingly small. Or conversely, if you're using a really big screen resolution, the comic that you make may be perfectly fine to you, but if you've got somebody that's got a low resolution monitor and they've got to scroll three pages sideways to get through the first panel, That's not increasing the readability. Now, the controversial bit here is my stance on Comic Sans. There are a lot of people who love Comic Sans, and there are a lot of people who hate Comic Sans.
Yes.
And this goes back to the number three, the forbidden types of comics. The internet,
the evil one.
The internet is just full of fonts. There's millions of them. You can pick something other than Comic Sans.
Yes.
I personally have no issue with Comic Sans, but I know people who have walked away from perfectly good webcomics where the art and the writing and everything is great because the guy was doing the lettering in Comic Sans. It's such a strong thing. I mean, there's a online petition going around to ban Comic Sans, to get Microsoft to stop putting it on new computers, because it pops up in a bunch of places where it honestly doesn't belong, and webcomics are one of the few places where it does, but it's so horribly overused because it's one of the default fonts stored on your computer that there's so many people who are vehemently against it. Why would you want to just throw the flag up there and say, "Hey, look at me, I'm using Comic Sans, hit me with your best shot"? I mean, it's
My issue with Comic Sans, yes, it is perfectly readable. It's a round font, which makes it legible even at small resolutions. And I understand why people like to use Comic Sans. The problem is for me, when you're writing graphically, your audience gets the voice not only from the character's posture, but also from the font. You can look at certain fonts and understand that that's a creepy voice, that's an angry voice, that's a, you know, you get that. Even sarcasm can even come through in font if it's chosen well. And there are people that do their fonts very well and very professionally. Comic Sans, to me, has no voice. It is the vanilla of font. It comes through as monotone and devoid of personality. I guess if that's the character you're trying to get across, then okay. I mean, I'm sure it could be used comedically, but I can't. It has no voice to me. It's just not personable.
It has a voice. It's the voice of the Antichrist.
Just go to any search engine, type in free fonts, and you'll find
1001freefonts.com is Lambot. One of my favorite.
Lambot yeah. has.
And try to find Lambot something that speaks specifically to your comic. I think I'm reading what's Comic Sans, and I don't remember. But there's like other ones that are kind of like the same all throughout, but you just don't know what it's called. That's part of the thing. You know what Comic Sans is called, but you can't really remember what the other ones are called, except I'm starting to recognize the ones that I'm using all the time. But
yeah. I'm a font nerd too, so there are a number of fonts that I recognize just from sight. But
there's a great web program for Windows called Font Explorer, and that's Explorer that visually lets you see all of the fonts that you've currently got on your computer, and it offers you a lot more control over them than the default Windows font management system does. Mm-hmm. And you can use that to go through and to see examples of how different things look. And it's just a really good tool for those, like, I myself am also a fontophile. I hope that's an actual word.
It is now.
Look at my comic. I rarely ever use the same font comic to comic. I will throw it up. I'll mix them up and use all sorts of different ones. And it's invaluable to me because it lets me see, you know, does this font have a full set of extended character support? You know, am I going to absolutely love this font, but then hit the question mark and get one of those little squares that comes up instead of the character because the guy who created the font didn't think anyone would ever be using a question mark. It's instrumental for that sort of thing. And real quick, another thing just about fonts, and then I think we'll toss it up to
put it to rest
for the third segment and put it to rest until we have to readdress this. Most of the graphics programs out there have anti-alias, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that right.
Alias.
Which is a alias. Yeah, okay. It's a smoothing thing for vector, which is what most of the fonts are.
Yes.
If you don't know how to use it, learn. Because
please.
What it will do is, if you've got, no matter what the font is, it's going to have some jagged edges, some jangles, some things like that, that are going to make the font jarringly bad looking. And that takes those sharp edges off, rounds it, causes it to fuzz a little bit on the outside edges, and it generally makes things look a lot better. It's a option in most of the major font, most of the major art programs out there. It's not in Microsoft Paint. Sorry.
Yeah.
But if you're using anything above and beyond Microsoft Paint, it should have this as an option, and hopefully it'll come automatically on. But if you ever would, you know, type something out and you look at it and you're like, why is that all blocky and pixelated? That's because somehow your aliasing has gone off and you need to turn it back on. Because that's another thing that anybody that reads a lot of webcomics, it's just so disconcerting to see a beautiful comic where someone has obviously spent hours and hours sketching and inking and coloring and doing all this wonderful work, and then they've just slapped any old text boxes that they could up there, and they've got, you know, the default font, and it's not aliased, and it's just, you know, the words are part of the art.
Yes.
And I think that that is something that a lot of people, especially the ones that don't do, that do the penciling in the real physical world and then add the words digitally and don't leave boxes or anything,
yeah.
I think that's a disconnect that a lot of people start out with.
And we can tell when they're tacked on. Yeah. It looks, yeah. It pulls from your art. There is something I want to say very quickly, is that there are people out there who are still, you know, hand lettering their comics. For those of us who find that, I salute them. For those of us who find that impossible, the cramping alone would kill me. You can, in fact, you know, purchase programs, or there are places online where you can have your own handwriting turned into a vector font, so that you can still use, you know, your voice. It's your handwriting. It's your voice for your comics without having to hand letter it. You can have that put into a vector font and then use it with any of those programs. Something to look into.
There is a program somewhere. Well, I'll try to find the link to it. How to turn your handwriting into the font. Font Creator.
Yeah, Font Creator is a good one.
Font Creator.
There are also services.
High-logic.com/fontcreator.html. There is professional version. There's like pay versions, but there's also a free version somewhere. I thought through the same site where you can download a template, draw your letters or whatever, and then scan it and upload it,
mm-hmm.
and that one's free to use. I don't know where that is, but that's like, that'll just basically turn a handwriting into a font. It doesn't have any options for tweaking or anything else like the actual program would have. But we need to stop now because it's been 10 minutes. And we'll have to pick this up again next week. When we continue this topic to reach the other five. But right now we have to take a break.
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted on RampageNetwork.com. Be sure to check out our weekly live broadcast on TalkShoe.com. Listen in, chat, or call in at WebcomicBeacon.com/live.
Real break, or is this just a hypothetical break?
They're all hypothetical breaks. He's a liar.
It's a break for the MP3.
He's a liar who drinks syrup. That's what everyone needs to know.
I gotta stop the podcast about every 20 to 25 minutes, because I like to keep the show about an hour and keep it into three sections as much as possible. So now we only have like, what, 10-15 minutes for this last section, which we'll go over some milestones and whatnot. We haven't done impressions for a long time, but we'll have to do that some other time.
Yeah, I'm still partially blind, so.
Okay. But
how do we do on time, though? Did we kind of at least sort of hit the post on that?
Well, I said we had like 5 minutes left, and we went for like at least 10 minutes. So,
oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. Anyway, we only got a couple of milestones mentioned to us this week. And anyone out there who has a webcomic milestone, such as 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, etc., or 100, 200, 300, 500, 1,000, 800. No, not 800. I'm not going to do 800.
Okay.
You can send us an email at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com this week. 2 year milestone, Insanity of Zaid, hits 2 years. It started out as
a computer drawn comic, and now she uses one of those 3D art programs, computer generated art programs, to do her comic. You can check that out. She didn't put a link in her frickin' thing. Yes, include a link in your email. And you can go to drunkduck.com, Insanity of Zaid, or ioxcomic.insanityofzaid.com. And that is 2 years since she says she's doing a special one for that one. Also, we have George sent us a comic that has hit 400 strips, and that is Oi! At oycomics.com.
Wait a minute, spell that.
Oycomics.com.
I thought you were mispronouncing we.
That's funny. Okay, that's funny.
Anyway, so that's it we have for milestones that have been reported to us.
I think we actually should do at least one 800 milestone.
I'm just giving crap. let's see here. I had a thought. Hello?
Hello?
Everyone went silent.
Well, you had, a thought. We didn't want to disrupt it.
We were all jumping around. I'm not used to it. Well, anyway, this week on the Webcomic Beacon, if we're going to look at our Project Wonderful advertisers. And if anybody who doesn't know, the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com has a leaderboard, a tower, and a banner all available for your money to advertise on this site right now. In fact, these three banners are also on a couple of the other websites that I have as well. My main site, PSIWebcomic.com, and also the Jenny Everywhere site currently has, I think, all three of them up there right now. So you get more eyeballs, and not just the Webcomic Beacon, though. Most are going to be on the Webcomic Beacon. But our leaderboard is the Apple of Discord at theappleofdiscord.com. Fancy that.
And, what a coincidence.
And our tower ad is, we had her on the show before from that Rosetta Stone. We're talking about the YouTube comic presentation.
Mm-hmm.
The Rosetta Stone Zombie Punk and Cock Robin, which is, as she said, they're kind of intertwining comics. That's at rosettastonecomic.com. And the price on that one's pretty cool, so you better go check that one out. And
better. You've been threatened.
Yeah. And the banner is Aptitude Test. I've seen this one advertised around before. I haven't had a chance to really look at it yet, but it looks like it's been around for a while. So, yeah, since 2006, it's got a solid art style. And I have still no idea what it's about. But check out Aptitude Test at aptitude.surfacingpoint.com. That's what that is. All right. Awesome.
Wow. There's a whole rainbow of promotional opportunities here at the Webcomic Beacon. Is there not, Fess?
Well, a few of the colors, anyway. So basically, last week we had somebody take advantage of an advertising opportunity, which is episode sponsoring. For $10, if you have a webcomic or art site, for $10, you'll get at least three notices of sponsorship. Two will actually be basically nice plugs, one at the beginning, one at or around a break, and then, of course, before we roll out, as well as an image link within the post itself. So, like, a permanent image advertisement up in the post, and, of course, that image will also be posted in any message boards that I post the episode in as well. So that's your advertising dollars. And the advertising dollars, well, goes to advertising dollars for us. So we can advertise the show so we can get more eyeballs, more ears for our podcast, as well as more eyeballs where you're at. And if you don't have a webcomic, comic, or art site, well, then it's $20. just because I can do that.
Wow. Monty Hall himself could not make a better deal.
I don't think he could.
I adore you. I adore you. Absolutely adore you.
I don't really have anything else to talk about. I'm kind of been busy all weekend. I've been busy a lot. I'm writing scripts for PSI for a change instead of just kind of sitting at the computer thinking, okay, what do I want to do?
Write scripts for those.
What?
You write scripts?
I am now.
I
got the next 10 scripts for PSI written up because it has some cameos and crossovers, and I want to make it as quick as possible without extending it by adding extra dialogue. I've actually cut out tons of dialogue, and I've saved some dialogue for jokes for later because it doesn't need to be right there. It can be used elsewhere. I'm finding that's kind of helping me a lot, thinking ahead and trying to really limit myself versus me just kind of drawing and composing with the general idea. Though I kind of like that, but I want to get some of this done.
See, I never write scripts. I mean, I write down little bits of dialogue or events, you know, like put them in order and stuff like that.
Right.
I've been writing scripts actually since PenguinCon because I have not been able to see. And drawing is difficult when you are blind, but I can type by touch. So, I've written, probably 45 comics.
Cool. Now you just have to draw them.
I just have to draw them. So, well, and throw out all the ones that I now think suck, you know, that I thought were hilarious when I first did them. I actually throw out 75% of the scripts I write.
And, well, speaking of, Tanya and comics. Can you give us an update, or if you're still looking, for that project that you and...
For that project. We are still... Astros Entertainment is an adult... well, we're going to go with website. There's a lot of different aspects to it. One of the aspects is our webcomics. All of the webcomics will eventually be available in print. But for now, they will be available online. We are currently looking for colorists. We do have a sample page up. We're asking people to color and send back to me. You can email it back to creator@betapone.com. All of the instructions are at estrusentertainment.blogspot.com. That'll give you, you know, what we're looking for as far as colorists. It'll give you our little non-discriminatory policy, and it'll give you the link to the sample. Soon, within the next week, we are going to also put out a call for pencilers, inkers, letterists, you know, those other aspects. We do have a number of projects. We're not just looking for one person. We have identified a few individuals that are going to be working on some of our projects, but we have not told them who they are yet. So some of you who have already applied have been selected, and you just don't know it.
Wow, it's like the draft.
It's like the draft. You've been selected, but you don't know yet. When we call your number, we will we'll actually send you a pitch for, you know, the comic that we're interested in having you work on. And that's generally the way we're going to work. We're going to do, you know, open applications, have people put in their stuff. And if we like what you do, typically we can look at your style and say, wow, this will be great for this script. And then we will offer you that script. And, of course, you're free to turn it down. What you do need to know before you apply or go to any of our links is that Estrus Entertainment is extremely adult. It's not only adult for graphic violence. It's adult for graphic sexual content. And by that, I mean porn. I've had people who have applied and said, well, you know, send me some of the scripts. And they thought, oh, I didn't know you meant that adult. Yes, I mean that adult. This is not Skinamax. This is porn. So, you know, if you're all fine with drawing half-clothed boobies, but you're not into drawing cock, don't bother applying. I hate to say it that way, but it's true.
Interestingly enough.
Interestingly enough.
I have applied.
But of course, Tanya's not going to tell me if I got in or not. But also, but the segue was that I saw someone had posted on one of those art sharing sites a tutorial of how to draw cum better.
Excellent.
So it was kind of funny.
Some people are really bad at it. Yeah, and sweat. Those are my two pet peeves, actually. Cum and sweat when it comes to drawing porn. People are bad. Oftentimes sweat, they wind up looking like they're covered in some sort of gel. And I do not understand this, and it is not attractive. So if you're one of those people, stop it. Don't apply. We'll tell you to stop it. But,
well, yes. Yeah. I want to have a question, because you said you probably won't be posting any of the applications. I am just honestly curious of the type of, because you basically give some line art.
Yes.
Which
not complete line art, but it's close.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a JPEG, and I had to actually clean it up a little bit. And I had to really mess with it to get the black lines to look right, because it's a JPEG and not index and whatever. But
We did this on purpose, actually. Okay. I am a little tricky. In that was, like I said, it was not finished line art. She hadn't cleaned it up yet. This is what I'm looking at doing. Is this acceptable to you guys? She's an incredible artist, and I love what she's doing, and she's going to be working on, the name of her comic is actually Estrus. That's the comic that she's been assigned to. And her line art is amazing, but the application line art is not clean. And we did that because we wanted to see what people could do with line art that was less than perfect. Some of our other comics are a little psychotic in nature. There's, you know, some violence, and there's going to be, you know, they're very dark in nature, and that's going to require a very edgy, sketchy line art. So we didn't want to find colorists who could do things with perfect line art, knowing that we do have projects that are going to be very sketchy and harsh. We want to see what they can do with.
Well, of course, in that aspect already, that kind of, because it's like, okay, my main question was, oh shit, what time is
yes.
it? Oh, we got a little bit of time. Okay, because it's like, okay, it's an outdoor scene with two women on a bench.
Yes.
Now, I suppose somebody could have sort of turned that into a night scene. Of course.
Just sitting on the bench, folks.
Yeah. And actually, we did have people who did. We had people who turned in sunset scenes, sunrise scenes, night scenes.
Well, because it sounds like he got something that's a little bit darker, which would totally call for a completely different type of coloring than that has so much open areas for color. Because usually those have though it sounds like it has a lot more black in it.
Some of them will.
My question is... Yes. Because you gave no coloring key or anything.
No
direction at all. I'm wondering, can you describe the different types of women? Like, you know, woman one and woman two, as far as like the hair or even ethnicity, perhaps, of them? Because I'm kind of curious what other people have submitted.
Well, because... Oh, you mean what people have submitted or what the actual script called for?
Well,
I'm not going to tell you what the script calls
for. Yeah, I know that. No, but I submitted a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white girl for the first one, and then like a mocha-skinned girl with dark hair and brown eyes for the second one. I thought it looked pretty good, but I was really wondering, it was like, what did other people do?
We actually had a decent blend. I was delighted to find that not everyone just turned in perfectly white women. We only had one entry, interestingly to me, where the one girl, she's in glasses and has a bun. She looks very scholarly. And we only had one entry where they made her actually a minority, where she had darker skin. Pretty much everyone else made her white. The other girl is almost openly sexual. You know, she's sitting in a provocative manner.
Right.
She's featured provocatively. And more often than not, people at the very least gave her a nice tan.
I feel bad now. I feel like I'm...
No, you shouldn't. I don't really think that it was racial stereotyping, because...
I looked at her eye and I looked at her nose. That's what kind of told me that she was...
Because the hint here is that our line artist, she's read the script. She had to in order to draw that scene. Well, you know, yeah. she knows these characters. And so she did put in some, you know, she put in some of those racial cues, that, you know, should help people understand, you know, their backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So, no, I think you hit it pretty well, spot on. You did good with that.
Yeah.
And yeah, we didn't give any direction because we want to see what the colorists come up with, because we don't want to babysit. We really want to be able to hand somebody a script, hand them all the line art, say, here's your character descriptions. We would like the colors. And be done with it. I don't want to, you know, field phone calls with, wait, what color is her blouse? Well, I don't really freaking care.
Or like, no, wait, this was supposed to be at night. Well, screw you. I got to do the entire thing over because it calls for an entirely different set of colors.
Yeah, no, we'll give all our colorists the scripts. Everyone will have access to all of it. They'll have access to pencils and inks and scripts and character descriptions and even just comments back and forth between creators. We're working in a very open format. No other project is being hidden. That's the other thing that I think is really important about Estrus. If you're working on one project, you'll still be able to see the progress on all the other projects and give input, woo-hoo. You know, to be able to say, you know, wow, I really like the way you did that in this. What if we tried this in this next one? So we want to make this as much community as possible, and because I think that's how we're going to make sure that we put out quality work.
Awesome.
It's my spiel.
And I think that's all the time we have for today, for the webcomic Beacon. And you can check that out again at estrusentertainment.com.
Yes, indeed. Well, what you're going to see is a splash page.
Okay. Fine.
We have a teaser. It's estrusentertainment.blogspot.com is where the application is currently.
How do you spell estrus?
Estrus. And yes, that's a cat in heat.
And there you have it. And that's, that's the word from the horse's mouth. Now... Oh, wow. Well, anyway, that is all for the Webcomic Beacon. And I hope you join us again next week for part two of How Not to Make a Webcomic. This has been Fess of PSIWebcomic.com.
This is Tanya of Betapone.com. Mark.
Mark?
This is Mark of AutumnLake.com.
He fell asleep. Adam.
And this is Adam of the Discord.com.
And everyone in the chat room, thanks for coming. Thanks for listening. We'll obviously come back.
That's all for the Beacon. Be sure to tune in next week.